Jeff here. Thanks for listening. Go to playvolutionhq.com/ccbag or click the link in the show notes for the show's archives, ways to connect, ways to support the show, information about happy hour, and more. Podcast, the longest running and most prolific early learning podcast. I'm Jeff Johnson. You can kind of think of me as your early learning bartender here at the Child Care Bar and Grill. I'm coming to you live from upstairs studio in the Snuggery along the Gulf of Mexico. With me, wearing braids today, it's put me off my game. I haven't seen this before, I don't think. We got Brett. How you doing, Brett?
I'm good. Every time I've worn braids, you've said something.
You've worn braids before?
At least once, because I remember you said something. Yeah.
Okay. It's a good look. Is it a kind of an easy mom look kind of thing, or what's the reason?
Because my hair is greasy, it gets it out of the way. This is the thing. First time I think I've done like braids since Ivy's been able to use her hands, and turns out she enjoys like hanging on to them.
So, sure.
Yeah.
That's a little bit of a bonding thing. How long until Ivy herself will be able to wear braids?
We've gotten a ponytail, but it was so small it was silly. So that was more me just, I don't know, objectifying her and like, I want to give you a ponytail. But I think it'll be a while. She's got some hair, but not a ton. Yeah.
Oh, and just think about all the mommy daughter hair battles that you have to look forward to. It's like, I need to run a comb through your hair. And like, no, you don't. And what's that? What you got a plan for that set out yet? Or just going
to. No. And I'm like, I love to play with hair. So that's been like one of the things I've looked forward to as a mom, but hopefully I can set up a system where she likes it too.
Yeah. You get at least 6 months out of hair enjoyment from her. So you said you got a story. Let's start off with that. What's
your
story?
So I had this experience, and as soon as it was done, I thought Jeff Johnson would like to hear about this. So we've got our two cats, Levi and Lumi, right? Mm-hmm. And so one of their favorite things is following me into the basement when I do laundry or like whenever somebody goes down to the basement. So like if we sneak down and they don't notice, then when we come up, you can see under the crack in the door, like the little kitty paws waiting to sneak down. But I've set up a system. So if they come back when I call, they get treats. Or if they like don't go down to the basement at all, they get treats. So it's like. So at least they're not just hanging. We just don't want them pooping in the crawl space is why I don't want them unattended down there.
Look, I mean, nobody wants anybody pooping in the crawl space. That's just, you got to have some Silence of the Lamb thing going on in your basement before that becomes okay.
So that's why I don't want them unattended down there. If we didn't have the crawl spaces, I wouldn't care. But so I was switching. Brent was off at the gym. He had just left for the gym. I went to switch the laundry or something. And then I came up. And I like call them and Levi comes right away because he's a good boy. And then Lumi comes like on a 30-second delay, but whatever. He's more of a rascal and he's got a toy in his mouth. And I thought, I didn't know we had toys down there, but whatever. No. Do you want to guess what it was?
It was, look, I'd like to be safe and say mouse. I'd like to get a little bit more adventurous. I'd go rat, but I'm going to say, Smurf.
It was a mouse, but not only was it a mouse, it was a dead mouse still attached to the trap. And he's just, and he's carrying it up like doo-doo-doo, whatever, look what I found. And then he brings it into the other room and I like pick up Ivy and I'm like trying to figure out what it was. And I'm like screaming and gagging and like they're like, because like he brings like Lumi's like, Levi, come check this out. Like I could like see it happening. Sure. And they're like biting at it and like all this stuff. It was still like, it wasn't, it hadn't been dead long. It was still pretty fluffy. And then so I call Brent and I'm like, what do I do? Like there's a mouse. And he's like, I don't know how you expect me to help you with this. I'm at the gym. He's like, just take it away from them. So I go over, I still have Ivy on my hip and I'm like trying to like, I get them to back up and then I pick up the mouse trap because I don't want to touch the dead mouse. And fucking Lumi bounds at it like it's a toy. Like I'm being attacked. And then so I'm like, okay, this doesn't work with a baby on my hip. So I run over and set her down in her little play area. And as soon as I set her down, she gets like the pucker lid, like, oh no, I'm on the ground. I'm supposed to be with you. So then I was like, we have no choice right now. You have to be on the floor because I need two hands for this. Oh, and so there's baby screaming and then me wrestling cats trying to get this dead mouse. And the more they bound at it, the closer its head gets to just coming off. In the dead trap, and eventually I finally got it, and I just threw it in the walkway outside. And
yeah. For and is it still laying in the walkway outside? Or?
No, I threw it in the walkway outside, and I turned on the porch light, the outside light, so that when Brent came home, he could see it and dispose of it. He did not. We haven't seen it. So something picked it up.
Oh, somebody picked it up and ate it. Well, that sounds good. Yeah. And so the cat comes up and he's like, hey, look what I caught. And
yeah, he was like, get to do. Like, he looked so proud. And I was like, my first thought was, oh, he's got a toy. Because they run around with toys in their mouths all the time.
Sure.
But no. And they were trying to like skin it is what I think they were doing. Because they were like pulling tufts of fur off of it so that they could eat it, I think.
You want to get into the creamy, nougat-y center.
Yeah.
That is a wonderful story, by the way. I think you've got really good podcast instincts, bringing that story to the podcast. That's great. So the basement situation, it's like an old farmhouse you have, right?
No, it's just like a cape or something. I don't know.
But it's like an older house, right?
Yeah, it's older.
So what's the basement situation? Is it going to be like a finished basement, or is it like one of those scary old house basements, or is it a combination, or what's the?
It's like a combination. So we've got like cement floor through most of it. It's like dingy. It floods sometimes. That kind of stuff. It's mostly storage. Brent's got like a wood splitting station down there, and then laundry, and then. The two ends of our house were extensions, so those don't have basement, those just have crawl spaces, and that's where you just have, like, these creepy holes in the wall that go to, like, this, like, small dirt crawl space that, like, is often flooded, and when we first moved in, well, actually, even still, you can find, like, beer bottles and stuff under there, because I guess they just, like, did the work themselves and were drunk while they did it. So, you know, and like in on one side of it where the entrance to the house used to be, they still have the stairs in that crawl space, which is like a little scary from like how people used to come into the house from outside. Yeah.
You need to totally start planning for one of those crawl spaces to be Ivy's playroom.
It's so gross.
Oh, yeah. So she gets down there. I mean, it's like, mm-hmm. if you got like raw dirt, she got a place to dig and still
lots
be inside.
Yeah.
Oh, I think it'd be great. That sounds like a great thing. So are you going to have the same rule for her as the cats for the basement? If you come right up, you get a treat after when mom's doing laundry, that kind of thing is,
I could probably make it work.
It seems to work for the cats, so.
Great for them. But now, like, anytime we, like, approach the basement, they expect a treat.
They're like, hey.
The door has to open for it to count.
So the other thing I thought is you better not get a third cat, because it sounds like a third cat, you would be outnumbered next time there's a mouse situation.
Oh, that's a good point. See, I've been trying to, like, my theory with cats is I think I'd like one of each. So right now we...
One of each? How many? One of each color? One of each?
Yeah, breed? I don't, like, whatever feels right, you know? So, like, we've got a striped, we've got a black. I kind of, like, so, like, orange or long hair. I'm really interested in a long hair. Yeah, because Lumi is more of a medium. I had hoped when we got him as a kitten, he would get long, but no, he's just crazy instead.
Okay, you might be just a little bit young to turn into a crazy cat lady.
I know. I have to convince my husband, and he's not convinced at all that we need any more cats. So
yeah,
it'll be
yeah.
a while.
I think also Christmas is coming, so maybe for Christmas this year, you go to the pet store and you get each of the cats a live mouse for Christmas, and then
Yeah, they think they're these great hunters, you know, like they practice,
sure,
but like they just have this energy. Well, Lumi does. Levi, I think, knows who he is. Lumi does not. And so like Lumi thinks he would be this great outdoor cat. He doesn't try to get out. He doesn't care. He's only been outside once. Oh, here's another thing. So because I'm crazy, I take my cats out on leashes because I don't want them to go into the street, because we live on a main road and the backyard is like into the wilderness where there's predators. So the other day it was nice out and Levi loves to go outside and he's good on the harness. So I take him out and then I've got Ivy with me, but then Lumi is just in the window like meow, meow, like so sad.
Aww.
So I was like, fine, I'll take you out. So it's his first time in the harness and I've got two cats and a baby. on a leash. But then we have a ladder on the porch because Brent's doing some gutter work and Levi seems to have wound himself in and out of this ladder. It was on its side. And then Lumi is trying to climb the banister of the porch, but isn't used to wearing the harness, so he can't hold himself upright. And they're on opposite ends, so he's like falling off, and I've got a baby with me and all this stuff. It was just craziness. I was like, I have bit off more than I can chew right now. So I called Brent while he was working upstairs and I was like, I need your help. He came and got the cats for me.
Okay, so don't get another cat yet.
Leashes.
Wait till the baby, at least until the baby's walking. Okay, since I mean, look, this is a great podcast story too. And since we're talking about pets and dead things, we're walking on the beach a couple of days ago, and me and the dogs, and it's early morning, it's about sunup time, and Gigi stops because she's sniffing all over for good beach smells, and she stops and she digs a little bit as she starts digging like a crazy dog, and she digs down about 18 inches into the sand.
Wow.
And then sticks her head down and pulls out a
seahorse.
I wish a dead baby rodent of some sort.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
It was still fairly fresh. And she was so happy with it. She's shaking it around. She sounds like kind of like a dog version of what your cats were doing. And she's so proud. And Slinky comes over and he sniffs on it for a little bit. And I'm like, hey, put that down. Let's go. And she's like, yeah, okay. And she puts it down and we go on our walk. But then when we're coming back, we get to her dead thing again. And she's got a sniff it, and she kind of flips it around a little bit, and then she does the best thing ever. She throws herself down and rolls on it.
Get all that
stink on it, and it was just beautiful. She was so happy. And then we went home and snuggled. So
oh, good.
Well, we're 13 minutes into the episode, so we might as well talk about something other than cats.
Yes, early learning.
So listeners, Brett's surprising me with another ordeal topic. What kind of ordeal are we talking about this time?
I was thinking the ordeal we put young children through of concerts and performances.
Ooh, what?
Concerts and performances.
Concerts and performances. Oh.
I don't know. It just came to me. I made a list on my phone of different ordeals. Actually, I was like, let me Google like preschool lessons, because I'm sure those are all bullshit on Google. And before I even wrote lesson, it was like preschool graduation songs. And I was like, well, there's an idea. I don't know why Google thinks I'm looking that up. But yeah, so I thought, like, I feel like it's very common to, like, you know, have the preschoolers or the young children, you know, like, put on like a winter concert where they have to sing songs in front of people. Or I've even seen like plays that they've had young children put on, and where they're literally performing in front of people. And
I think these things are great, and I think we should do more of them.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, believe me. What are you eating?
I'm eating a muffin.
Oh, what kind?
Blueberry.
That sounds delicious. I think I'm going to make scones tomorrow. Why do we... My experience with those kind of things is it stresses everybody the fuck out. The kids are stressed out, most of them, because, you know, there's that look at me kid that wants to be the star. And that's great. But most of the kids would rather be playing around with dead mice like your cats or what. I mean, they have their other things they'd like to be involved in. And the teacher is stressed because they're doing this because they feel they have to do this or they've been told they have to do this.
And the parents, how the kids do is a reflection of how good a teacher you are somehow.
The kids don't, if they don't have their song memorized or Timmy can't stand still for 2.5 minutes to sing the stupid song, you're a bad teacher. And then parents are stressed because they got to pack up the whole family and go watch this thing when they'd rather, after a hard day of work, go sit down and have a beer. But still programs feel that they have to do this stuff. And I mean, maybe there are people out there who everybody involved loves it, but I've never seen or heard that.
Yeah, so like at my old school, they did where once a week the whole school would come together and some kids would put on performances. And I definitely, as the preschool teacher, was put under pressure of like, well, I think people would really appreciate to see preschool go up there and do something. So we would like go to see the other people, which again is a whole other thing to make preschoolers sit through. Like watching a performance.
Oh yeah, that's the other thing. Everybody else has got to sit and watch the other class's stuff and
So we would go watch and then I would like talk to the class like, hey, if you guys ever wanted to go up there and show something off, let me know and we could make that happen. So usually then we would do like if we were really into a song, like we really liked Hurry Hurry There's a Fire. So then I
don't
like,
know that one. Could you sing it?
It's kind of long. They're like, hurry, hurry, there's a fire. Hurry, hurry, there's a fire. Hurry, hurry, there's a fire. Ding, 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 ding. But then you like go through all the steps of like what the firefighters would do. Like you drive the fire truck, you climb the ladder, you spray the water. And then at the end it goes, it's all right, the fire's out now. Drive the fire truck back to the station. Tired firefighters go to sleep now. Snore, 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 snore.
A couple of thoughts.
Oh, and one of them saved the people, and I would have the kids like when we did like the actions, we would actually wave our arms in the air like you should actually do if you're stuck in a fire for that practice.
Aren't you supposed to be down on the floor so you don't suffocate?
But like if there's firefighters in your house coming to save you, you should be moving around so they can see you.
See you. Okay, yeah, it's probably that makes sense. First, you have a very skilled teacher singing voice.
Thank you.
Congratulations on that. Also, too, I heard that in a lot of fire academies where they train young firefighters, they use that site when they're that song when they're going through the drills. The academy cadets sing the song while they're doing all those things. So that'd be a great video to watch.
Firefighters in their clothes. Yeah. So we perform that, and then, you know, like, a teacher friend sends me the video of it, and it's, like, me and my co-teacher going all out, and the preschooler's, like stunned, like, fight or flight on stage, and so it's, like, this isn't worth it. It's just to, like, objectify the young children and make people feel like, oh, how cute, look at them go, and yeah.
So what are the benefits of doing those things supposed to be?
I don't know. I feel like people would be like, oh, it's effacing your fear because it's intimidating. I don't like trying to think like what people would say the benefit of it is. Oh, it's spreading awareness that you're there. I don't know.
So I'm guessing there's some community building with the program and the families probably. And doing public speaking
kind of
performance
stuff,
kind of thing. Great. So instead of putting kids through an ordeal like that, and staff and parents through an ordeal like that, because look, it's probably not 100% of everybody thinks it's an ordeal. Some people probably love the fuck out of it, but there's got to be a fairly high percentage of people who think that stuff is
a waste
of their time, right?
Yeah. Oh, I would think so. Well, and it's like when you think about like how much like redirection or something it took preparing to get to that spot where then they could perform or whatever it might be, or like, is it like clearly the children don't feel, I don't know, the best.
Yeah. And then what time in your program, what time did they do this, during the day?
Yeah, it was like a weekly thing where the whole school would come together, so it's not like they were necessarily parents, but I mean for us it was like literally after nap time. So we would have to like wake up and get ready, get over there. And most of the time we were just just watching it.
Yeah.
And I had always told the kids, because like sometimes it would get really loud with songs and stuff, that if at any point this is too much for you, let me know and we can step out. Because it could be overwhelming too, just to have to sit through it.
Yeah. And I mean, like, there's no good time to do these things, because I've known programs, they do like a Christmas program every year, and they do it like during the afternoon of their last day before Christmas break or something, but parents were expected to show up, and that's midday. And I mean, if you're working or attending school as a parent or whatever, most kids aren't in early learning programs, because parents are just sitting home, chilling on the sofa. They're out doing things. Yeah. And so you got to rearrange your schedule to show up for those things. And then if it's evening, it's the same thing, because you got to reschedule soccer practice or whatever the family was doing that evening. And so just fitting those things in is challenging, but
And then like I like some places will like, oh, we'll put it on like a Saturday morning or so, you know.
Sure, because like, everybody likes getting up on their day off and
in a row, it feels like.
So that's we got back off on the negatives again. We were trying to think about what I wanted to talk about is how could we get the benefits of those activities without the ordeal, I guess, is what, because if you can get the same positives without going through the ordeal, why not avoid the ordeal?
Yeah, no, I had children in my class who they really enjoyed performing. I think I told you they had their band, the Bad Babies. There was like a gazebo on the playground, and that would be their stage. And then just like they would go around to all the other kids beforehand and say performance at the gazebo or whatever it was. And children who were interested in watching came and observed, and they did their Bad Baby songs. And it was often like JoJo Siwa covers, and people watched who wanted to watch, and teachers would come and watch because they thought it was like sweet and fun. And then other children would be inspired to put on their own performances or would join or not join. And it happened naturally. It wasn't other people saying, now it's time to do this.
I mean, my experience is that if somebody, a child or an adult, wants attention,
they
can figure out how to draw a crowd. And that's my experience too. In the center and in family care, if somebody wanted, and maybe it would be one kid and maybe it would be a group that they're going to put on a show, or, hey, sit down and watch me. And I mean, there are always seem to be other kids that are like happy to be the audience.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, it just kind of works out. They kind of figure it out for themselves if you've got an environment open enough to give them the power and control to make those things happen on their own.
Yeah. No, I was gonna say, and kids like to see other kids have fun. Like, when a dad's like throwing a kid up and down and like that kid's like dying laughing, there's usually like other kids who see that will laugh along, because it's just so fun to see people have fun. Where, you know, when it's a forced performance, it kind of takes the fun out of it. I mean, obviously it takes the play out of it, and then it takes away some of the like joy that you see in seeing it too.
Yeah.
Really occurring. And
I think, you know, I was, I was a don't look at me, don't make me stand up in front of people and do stuff kid. And I think maybe part, I mean, in high school, I couldn't get in English class. I couldn't get up. You got to get up and do the little thing with the index cards. You got to do like that 30-second presentation in front of the class. Couldn't do it. Couldn't do it in high school. And I think part of it is because I was pushed into some of that kind of stuff in elementary school with their stupid performances and that kind of stuff. And it just shut me down to it. And it took a lot as an adult to get over that, to kind of stand up in front of 800 people and talk for 4 hours. But I figured it out. But it would have been a lot easier if there hadn't been all that anxiety caused when I was six and had to stand. Even show and tell was anxious. You bring your
rock. Right. I feel like when I think of that, I brought, because I used to collect tea sets when I was really little. So I brought one of my tea sets, but then there was so much anxiety of like, is this going to get broken? Is a little piece going to get lost? And maybe that was like my parents trying to front load me to be careful, but then it put me in such like a nervous state about what's going to happen to my stuff, but I have to bring it. It's my turn. And it would be more embarrassing to forget or like to not bring something.
Yeah. So how did that for, I mean, when you were a little bit older and you're being a gymnast, how was the gym, there were meets, right? That's the thing.
Yeah, we had meets. And because it's more of an individual sport, it's just you on the floor or whatever. But also I didn't need to talk. And so I think that was part of it, was you didn't need to talk. You knew exactly what you were doing because it's the same every time. The most that would change would maybe be like a tumbling pass because you learned a new skill, which would be exciting to do something that could maybe get you. Uh-huh. I mean, I never looked at my score. I was kind of like, I was there for the fun gymnast. I wasn't like competitive like that. I wanted my team to do well, but I never really cared how I did, I guess.
And probably easier to get out there and do it because it was something you like doing too.
Yeah. And like, I like had good like performance ability where I loved like to smile at people. I actually got in trouble in one meet because I had this like, not even a skill, just like part of like, you know, on the beam, you would like do some of the, like, the dance stuff too. It's not just tumbling. And so I would do
do all kinds of, every time I'm on the beam.
Yeah. So I would go like upside down on the beam and do this thing where my foot touched my head, whatever. And then so while I did that, I like made a silly face at my teammates. So like I stuck my tongue out at them. And after I finished, the judge pulled me aside and let me know that I could get points deducted for having stuck my tongue out. But she saw that it was just me having fun with my friends. But next time I shouldn't do that because I could get points off. Yeah.
And that's where your Olympic career derailed.
That's where it stopped, yeah. No, and I, like, on my floor routine, I had so much fun. I always, like, scheduled in a part where I would wink at the judges. like, scheduled in. Yeah. I, like, added it to my choreography. Yeah.
Wink?
Yeah.
Is that written up in your choreography? Did it wink?
I just knew it was the right moment.
You knew the right place to wink.
Yeah.
I haven't thought about winking, but I don't think I've ever known the right time to wink.
I love winking.
I don't do a lot of winking, and I don't know why. What's your, so you have specific winking times? What's the?
Yeah. I feel like when you're like needing to give a child some feedback on something, but you want them to know, like, not a big deal, but I just need to let you know next time let's not. Mm-hmm. That kind of a wink, I feel like, just to like show there's like, it's not that big a deal to you, like I'm not upset and I know you could feel bad about this, so let's throw a wink in there so you know it's fine and I know you know. I don't know, I feel like that's when I might wink.
So here's my plan. Cause I'd like to have more winking in my life. I think that would be a good thing for me. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to practice with the dogs for a couple weeks.
Yeah. Or an inside joke is a good time to wink. Like if somebody, like say like you and Tasha have a friend over and they're really annoying. Nah. I know that's not going to happen. And they're really annoying. It's always nice when someone is like, really driving you nuts to wink behind their back at your friend.
All the behind the back wink.
So that you both know, like, oh my God, right?
I'll practice with the dogs to get comfortable with it. Then I'll try winking at Tasha. And my guess is she will think I have something in my eye or that I'm having a seizure of some sort. So I don't expect it's gonna go over well, but I'm gonna give it a try. I'll try to remember to report back on my attempts at winking. I would never try winking outside the Snuggery family.
No.
I can't. Or maybe. Oh, what I think one I would enjoy is the uncomfortable wink. Next time I'm at the grocery store, I'm just gonna start randomly winking at people and see what happens.
Well, you like tomatoes, right? And then like wink at them.
Yeah, that's right. Oh no, the maintenance guy around here was here working on the air conditioner the other day, and he's a big old dude from South Africa, and he's just a duty dude, and I'm gonna try winking at him and see what happens, just to see what happens. So listeners, stay tuned for that. So is the performance and concerts and graduation stuff, what are the other, I mean, what do the programs get out of it? Is it marketing? Is it family awareness? Is it,
I feel like it's like a
bonding?
You know, like,
is it,
right, like you kind of want to check that box of family involvement, and I feel like inviting families to come watch a performance maybe feels like it checks that box for people.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
I mean, is there less stressful ways to do that?
I don't, well, so like, you know, in the project approach, like in the actual, like, where you like, I guess you don't need to go through the book and do it, but usually like your culmination would be sharing what you learned through your project. And I feel like that's kind of a more appropriate way where, I mean, I guess the way I've seen it done with projects is like, yeah, you invite the families to come, and yeah, it's usually like an after hours thing. So they still need to like take that time out of their schedule. But then there's like the documentation set up of all the stuff you've done for your project that then like parents can just talk to their kid or kids who are interested in sharing about it, about, you know, that like we did when I was in college, that was one of our courses, was we had to do a project. So it was kind of like forced on the kids, but we had a lot of fun with it and like, you know, kept it within their interests and all that stuff like we were supposed to. So we did a vegetable project and we culminated it by sharing soup that we had made and like had all the documentation out. The soup was rancid. It was disgusting. because we just like throughout the like time where we were working on the project, we were like, oh, if you have a vegetable, just bring it and we'll freeze it to put in our soup. And it smelled like rotten garbage.
Soup that 3-year-olds made? Is that what we're talking about here?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's got to be like 75% snot, right?
It was so gross. I remember we had done like a bunch of different cooking stuff. So we made like zucchini bread or something. And this little boy, like, he gets the bowl to get his turn to stir and sneezes directly into it. And me and my like fellow college student, like, we looked at each other trying not to laugh. And we were like, like, what do we do? Like, it's not like we can be like, don't sneeze. So we're like, if you sneeze again, you're going to need to take a break from the cooking area because we didn't know, like, how do you approach that? But I feel like that's a more appropriate way for getting family involvement, getting children to, like, kind of share something, but that's more naturally occurring.
Yeah, I think anything you could do to have kind of gatherings that are more chill.
Yeah.
Less performance-based, more conversation and hanging out and chilling-based, I guess. I don't know what that... And I think also smaller groups. Instead of everybody from the whole program. It's just a lot. And it's overwhelming. I mean, it's overwhelming for the kids and everybody. And in those situations, kids don't know who to listen to, right? Because mom is there and teacher's there, and which rules apply here? Do I behave like I do at home, or do I behave like I do at the program? And so it's kind of stressful for kids when you have especially the bigger the group is, the more prevalent that is, I think, probably.
The program I worked at, I wasn't there for this performance, but they did like a kindergarten, first and second grade performance. And one year they had an issue where this little boy just like kept flipping the bird throughout the performance. And I was at the meeting like the next day, like where all the teachers come together and like they could, like we're supposed to talk about like curriculum or like what are we doing kind of stuff. But like they could not get over the fact that that is all this kid did during the performance. And like, oh, what do we do? Like, that's not okay. And blah, blah, blah. I was like, he's probably overwhelmed. He like maybe wasn't like, I don't know, like wanted to see what would happen and all this stuff. And they're like, and it was so distracting and it's embarrassing and blah, blah, blah. And I had parents of preschoolers who had watched the performance for their older children. And I kind of was like, oh, how was it? Just to like see, because all I heard about was this kid being vulgar. And none of the parents noticed. They all just look at their own kid. But like, it was this huge deal to the teachers that this is what was happening. It ruined the performance. It taints everybody else's experience. But no, no one really noticed.
Yeah, I like to think that that kid didn't want to be there.
Right.
And his dad is like, I don't want to be there either. So here's what you're going to do, buddy. And then the kid does it. And I like that kid. I don't know any of the other kids and I don't know that kid, but that kid right away is my favorite kid.
Right.
I like to hang out with that dude. The graduation thing too. They do the gown.
The gowns. I've never been at a school that does that. But
it's just so much. And look,
through stuff, waiting for your name, not knowing the alphabet well enough to know when it's about to be your turn, and
I don't know. Look, listeners, if you love concerts and graduations and performances and want to come on the show and tell me why Brett and I are wrong for thinking this is an ordeal, I'd love you to get a hold of me and talk about it, because I don't have experiences with programs that just love the hell out of doing this stuff.
Right.
Mostly it seems like it's an obligation.
Yeah.
And if there aren't any solid benefits that you can't get in other ways, why put yourself through the ordeal?
Right. No, I did have, so when I was in fourth grade, so this is older, so maybe that's when it can be a little more appropriate. I went to an arts elementary school. So like,
of course you did.
Of course I did. I know. So in addition to like the general curriculum stuff, we also had a lot of focus on the arts. So we did like music, art, dance, and drama were our extracurriculars. But the fourth graders every year made an original opera. And that was pretty fun, actually. Stop it. Don't laugh at me. So, but they, like, I think the teachers had perfected it, where they brought in an additional teacher at the very least, or additional person to help who, like, knew how to compose music. But we, as, like, a group of fourth graders, like, it was all very communal of, like, what do we like about this? And maybe I was just somebody who was really into it. But, like, you know, like, we all gathered ideas about what we thought. And then we voted of what we thought, like, the storyline could be. And from there, we flush out the story. And then from there, we wrote the songs ourselves. And then you got to pick, after we had all the songs written and we knew what the parts would be, then you chose what part you wanted. And we still held auditions and the teachers like assigned from there. But if you wanted to be on tech, you got to say, I want to be on tech. And like, there was like one person who like, all they wanted to do was turn off the lights at the end. And like, they made that happen for that person kind of stuff.
And see, I like that, because it sounds like you guys had a lot of power and control over the thing. And it was a group of kids that were in that school because they were into that kind of stuff. And
for the most part, like, it was community school, like some of it was neighborhood kids or just like who was close to. But I think they like worked to make it so people who wanted a voice in it had a voice in it. Like, I remember, like, it was like everybody submit your ideas for stories, and then the teachers kind of picked which ones seemed more fleshed out or something. And then they had us gather in a small group. because I had one of them. I don't even remember what I wrote. And like, and discuss like what we liked about it or what we think we could do with it. Do you want to know what the story was about?
Yes, absolutely.
It was about a group of aliens who took a trip through the civil rights movement because the striped aliens were being prejudiced against the polka dotted aliens. And do you want to know what my part was?
Yes.
I played a good striped alien. So when the polka dotted aliens took their trip through the civil rights movement, I was a good striped alien who followed them and then was able to verify their story of, yes, we should accept people because this is what America's gone through.
Oh, please, please tell me there are pictures of you in a striped alien costume somewhere.
I don't know. I don't know.
I think you need to.
I still have met most of the songs memorized. Harriet Tubman's gonna be our guide.
Just the fact that you remember that much of it from fourth grade tells me it was a good thing.
I still know most of the songs. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't remember anything from fourth grade. It was hideous. No. It was horrible. It's all blocked out. It's all crammed deep down inside the trauma box.
But that, I feel like you were older, so it was maybe a little more developmentally appropriate.
Sure, because, I mean, how old are fourth graders?
Fourth graders are 9 going on 10, I believe.
Yeah, so that's 2 or 3 times the age of a preschooler. Yeah. So there's a lot more human development has happened by then. But I think for early learning programs, it's all an ordeal. All an ordeal. Yeah. You know what needs to happen?
Hmm.
It would be great on the Playvolution site if there were some posts, if there was a series of ordeal things like, hey, there's this is an ordeal, and this is why it's an ordeal, and this is alternatives. I think that'd be great resources for somebody.
Yeah.
So somebody should get on that.
Someone should do that.
Somebody should do that. Before we wrap up, I gotta hear a baby Ivy update. What's she doing? She's rolling.
She's rolling everywhere. Yeah. So we're doing like a little floor bed in her nursery. She usually just sleeps in our room. I was like, let's try the floor bed for some naps. She fell off it twice, but she's fine. But we had our first ordeal of sick baby. She caught a little cold from me, and then turned out we went to urgent care, and they were like, you guys have COVID. But I would have had no clue. So me and Ivy had COVID, but I mean, I felt sick for 2 days, didn't realize it was anything worse than a cold, and she's doing fine.
And it wasn't.
Yeah, it wasn't like a huge thing. So I texted my coworker who I knew gave it to us. And I was like, just so you know, like, you have COVID too. Yeah.
You made my baby sick.
Yeah, but I was like, whatever. Like, she's fine. People get sick. Yeah. I don't know. I was saying to my mom about it, where I was like, I've seen enough sick kids working with children for so long that, like, you kind of get a feel for when it's like worrisome. Yeah. We only went to urgent care because when I called the pediatrician because she had a fever, they were like, why don't you just get some eyes on her just to check because she's so little still. But even then, like, nobody seemed worried about anything. And she's still like, even while like feeling crummy with like the little pink eyes and everything, was still like laughing and stuff.
Poor little thing. Yeah. With the rolling, is she going back to front, front to back, left to right, right to left? What's her move?
She's a bigger fan of back to front. She can front to back, which is what you're supposed to do first, but she would much rather back to front. She loves tummy time. Like, she'll just hang out on her little stomach with her little feet up in the air behind her. So that's
well, I do recall she has an above average neck strength.
She's got that great neck. Yeah. So I think that's part of why she likes it so much. So she rolls, or it's like, you know, like I set her down to play while I go make some coffee, and then I come back and somehow she's moved 3 feet but is in the exact same position.
It's that little scoot thing where they're scooting and don't know they're doing it, or is it rolling?
Yeah, I think she's not moving. Yeah. And she's starting to reach for toys a little more. She really likes things that crinkle. So, yeah.
And I can hear her in the background yelling for mommy.
Supposed to be sleeping.
That's awesome. So she's still cool? You're still into her?
I still enjoy her. Yeah. And even Brent was like, you know, she's kind of fun now. He said the first few months that he was like, I thought we made a mistake. This was not fun. And he's like, but we're getting there. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, man. He's going to like her when she starts walking and starts following.
I know. Well, he wants to go on hikes and all that stuff. So I think that'll be fun for him.
Yeah. That's going to be great. Anything else we should touch on before we wrap this up?
I don't think so. That's all I
So the takeaways are pets like dead things.
Yes.
Programs are ordeals.
Yes.
And baby Ivy is fucking awesome.
Yes. That sounds perfect.
I think that sums up the show pretty well. Hey, listeners, this has been the Child Care Bar and Grill. Oh, and winking. Winking is a thing that Jeff should practice. This has been the Child Care Bar and Grill podcast, the world's longest running and most prolific early learning podcast. Where else are you going to hear about dead critters, grouchy opinions about programs and cute babies all in one 45-minute podcast episode? Probably all over the place. That stuff is probably in a lot of episodes, a lot of shows, but... this one has Brett, so you got that going for you. Back soon. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production. Oh.